5:05 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Sunni Shia tensions spread in the Middle East. Saudi allies Bahrain and Sudan joined Riyadh Monday in cutting diplomatic ties with Iran following an attack that damaged the Saudi embassy in Tehran, part of the international firestorm resulting from the Saudi execution of 47 people, including a well-known Shia cleric. The heightened tensions came in the aftermath of Saudi Arabia's execution Saturday of Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, a move defended Monday by Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Abu Jubair. There were further anti-Saudi protests across the Arab world, including in Iraq. At the White House, spokesman Josh Earnest called for a de-escalation of conflict, saying it could cause the Syrian peace process to suffer.
One reason that we are hopeful that it won't is that it is so clearly in the interests of both countries to advance a political solution to the situation inside of Syria.
The heightened tensions came in the aftermath of the Saudi execution of the Sheikh, a move defended Monday by Saudi Foreign Minister Adel al-Jubair.
The Iranians and their allies have been pushing and promoting terrorism and recruiting people, inciting, providing weapons and explosives to people, and Nimr al-Nimr was one of them.
The Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei warned Sunday Saudi Arabia faces divine vengeance for its execution. Unidentified assailants fired shells toward the center of Burundi's capital Bujumbura Monday, 2 days before peace talks between the government and opposition are set to begin in Tanzania. At least 3 people wounded over the weekend, at least 3 killed. One witness says murdered by a policeman. Police say they're investigating. This is VOA News. Afghan officials say security forces killed all 4 heavily armed assailants holed up since late Sunday in a building near India's consulate in the northern city of Mazar-e-Sharif. At least 1 security force personnel was killed, 9 others wounded. The standoff began Sunday after the gunman tried to storm the Indian diplomatic mission. An alliance of more than a dozen militant groups called the United Jihad Council, based in Pakistani Kashmir, have claimed responsibility for an attack by heavily armed gunmen on a strategic Indian air base in northern Punjab state near the Pakistani border. The 3-day assault claimed at least 12 lives, including the gunmen and security force personnel. There are concerns that this attack, coupled with what occurred against the Indian consulate in Afghanistan, could jeopardize peace talks between Pakistan and India. U.S. authorities say they're trying to end a 3-day occupation of a federal wildlife center in the northwest state of Oregon, where armed anti-government protesters took over the facility and declared they're prepared to stay for years. Ammon Bundy, a spokesman for the protesters, says the 2 ranchers have been treated unfairly by U.S. authorities.
Dwight and Stephen Hammond are being forced to report to prison today for a crime they did not commit and they've been put twice in jeopardy for. They've already served prison time for this already, and now they're being forced to go back again.
The 2 faced extended prison sentences for setting fires on federal land in an area they had used to graze their cattle. Both ranchers are seeking clemency from President Obama. Bundy said the case is a symptom of, quote, a huge, egregious problem happening across the country with the government imposing too many restrictions on land use and causing economic harm to the local populace. Yemen's port city Aden is under a dusk-to-dawn curfew after fighting between anti-government militia and government forces killed more than 20. The gunmen fired on government forces who arrived in Aden to try to secure the port facilities. The gunmen are believed to be secessionists who joined the government in battling Houthi rebels. The U.S. has shut down a drone base in southern Ethiopia that was part of the U.S. anti-terror campaign in the region. An embassy press spokesperson said the 2 countries reached a mutual decision that the U.S. presence in Arba Minch is not required. The U.S. base opened in 2011, was used to launch drones over Somalia, home to the Islamist group Al-Shabaab. Zambia plans to hold national elections August 11. President Edward Lungu, seeking his own first full term, expected to formally approve a constitutional amendment ratifying the election date on Tuesday. Mr. Lungu's predecessor, Michael Sata, died in office in 2014. Zambia's economy likely to be a major campaign issue. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Tuesday, January 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There's been more violence in Burundi ahead of the next round of peace talks.
For those cases of insecurity, the Ministry of Public Security sympathized with the bereaved families and informs the public that each case was followed by a careful investigation that will bring the perpetrators to justice.
That's Burundi police spokesman Pierre Nkurikiye. Doctors and nurses strike in Zimbabwe is said to be affecting the poor. 20 of the 30 candidates in the Central African Republic election are demanding a halt to vote counting. And South Sudan women said they want peace to reign in their country in 2016.
The government and the SPLM in opposition should have a political will to implement this peace, because the people of South Sudan, in particular women, have suffered enough during the war.
Mary Justo is a journalist and an activist in Juba. A Gambian group is working to bridge differences among Fulani groups, and the Abidjan Zoo is recovering slowly after years of crisis. Those stories plus Mark Oman's course and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Peace talks between Burundi's government and opposition are set to start in Tanzania this week, but there's been no let-up in the violence troubling the capital city, Bujumbura. Viewer Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
Unidentified assailants fired three shells toward downtown Bujumbura Monday morning. One of the shells landed a few meters from the offices of the mayor, injuring three people, including a woman who was seriously wounded. Brief panic ensued after the attack. Over the weekend, at least three people were killed. Eyewitnesses say that one of them was a young musician murdered by a police officer. Police officials say he was a criminal fleeing arrest when he was accidentally gunned down. Authorities have opened an investigation into the incident. Bujumbura saw dozens of shootings and bombings during 2015 amid the protests against President Pierre Nkurunziza's bid for a third term. The United Nations says at least 400 people have died. Pierre Nkurunziza, police spokesman for Burundi, said his ministry is asking the public to remain vigilant.
For those cases of insecurity, the Ministry of Public Security sympathized with the bereaved families and informs the public that each case was followed by a careful investigation that will bring the perpetrators to justice.
Burundians, meanwhile, are waiting for negotiations between their government and the opposition to begin on January 6th in Arusha. Tension is running high ahead of the talks, as the African Union has said it may deploy up to 5,000 peacekeepers in Burundi. The government has said that if the troops come without permission, they will be attacked. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The strike by doctors and nurses in Zimbabwe is said to be affecting poor Zimbabweans, as patients seeking state medical help at government hospitals say they cannot afford to pay consultation fees of up to $30 per person charged by private practitioners. Patricia Mudadigwa of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from the capital, Harare.
It is 3 p.m. at Parenyatwa Hospital in Zimbabwe. Stretchers carrying critically ill patients are lined up at the observation ward, their relatives watching them in despair. Doctors and nurses have engaged in an industrial action of unpaid salaries. Patients are taking a long time to get medical help. The queue is long and winding and moving very slowly. Some patients are saying they've witnessed others dying in the queue, though this cannot be confirmed by hospital authorities. The situation is dire. Patrick Kagura, who has been in the hospital queue for almost 2 days, told Studio 7 he witnessed some patients dying while waiting to get medical help.
Everybody, I can say there are people in the queue, there are people dying there, there are people, many people in the queue, but there is nobody who's here. No doctor, no help.
Another patient, Robert Ganyan, told Studio 7 he now fears for his life, as he has learned that two people lost their lives in the queue while waiting for a doctor.
When we came here in the morning, he told us two people died while on the queue before they got attended. Some of them needed urgent treatment, but doctors were not here to attend to them. And here you can look at the situation. Some are critically ill. They might face the same situation. The situation is bad. We actually urge government to prioritize the health so that people can get treatment. Lives are being lost.
Harare resident Bradley Shonai added that the government should address the dire situation in order to curb the loss of lives.
The situation is so bad. People are not being attended to in time. And so that it will give, you know, patients more, you know, burden for them to have a good treatment. The time I came here, it's now, I came here about 10, and now it's 3:20. You can imagine, we are still in line waiting for the physician to look to the to attend to the patient. I think government should put more budget to hospitals, and the staff, they must increase the staff, so that whenever a patient comes, quickly must be attended to.
Zimbabwean doctors and nurses said they are too incapacitated to go to work as the government has not yet paid their salaries. While they are fighting to get their pay, patients are said to be dying in queues at general hospitals. Reporting in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
South Sudanese women say they have noticed that not a single woman was named as governor of the 28 states created by President Salva Kiir. They say their expectation for 2016 is for peace to come to their country so that their suffering will end. Kaltuma Vanessa, a fellow with VOA South Sudan in Focus program, spoke to several South Sudanese women and has this report.
Mary Jastutombe is a journalist and an activist in Juba. She says her hope for this year is to see that the government implements lasting peace so that all the suffering, including hunger, rape, and loss of loved ones, come to an end.
The government and the SPLM in opposition should have a political will to implement this peace, because the people of South Sudan, in particular women, have suffered enough during the war, and they are still continuing to suffer. This war now has worsened the economy of the country. People are unable to put one meal on the table. Children are on the streets. Everybody is scattered. So for next year, if the government of national unity is in place, I hope that things will become better.
Pelek Obur, executive director for Women Empowerment Project in Juba, says in 2016, the guns must be silenced.
For 2016, we expect not to hear guns again. We expect the guns to stop. For 2016, we expect that the process of reconciliation and healing for the entire nation would have started.
Pelek also says the government should include women in the process of developing the country.
Take women seriously and do not treat women issues as if they are not important issues. Because we, if it was not for the women of South Sudan, we wouldn't have had independence. We wouldn't have had separation. And if it was not women who equally fought on the front lines with men in this struggle to have South Sudan, we wouldn't have made it.
Davidika Ikai chairs the Network Women Group in Torit. She says her expectation for this year are simply for peace to prevail.
My message to the entire South Sudanese people, especially the men, when there is any issue, it shouldn't be a gun, but let it be in form of dialogue. Let us promote dialogue rather than gun.
Lily Hidita is a businesswoman in Torit Market. She says 2016 must be the year that women can make money and support each other. She says if women get higher-ranking government positions, including governors, they can support each other.
When our women holding a position like a governor in other states, she will be able to promote their fellow women. And the government can not take all of us, but for the women of South Sudan, I'm advising them to come out next year, do business. And secondly, those who are dropped out from the school, let them go back to adult education.
South Sudanese women say without peace, there is no life, no development. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
Today is Tuesday, January 5th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, and Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. 20 of the 30 candidates seeking the presidency in the Central African Republic are demanding that authorities immediately stop vote counting from the December 30 polls, which they alleged were marred by ballot irregularities and vote intimidation. In a joint statement seen by French news agency reporters on Monday, the dissenting candidates called the polls an electoral masquerade and called for the whole process to be purely and simply stopped. They also called for all parties to negotiate procedures for safeguarding the nation of 5 million citizens. This statement came as partial vote tallies released on Sunday show independent candidate Faustin Touadéra, a former prime minister, winning with 23% of the vote after a tally of 139,498 ballots. The most prominent candidate to contest the results was Desiré Kolingba, the son of a former president, in fourth place with just under 35% of the vote in the former French colony. A group in the Gambia is working to bridge differences among various Fulani groups in the country by promoting the ethnic group's culture and language. Fulbear Africa is focusing on the evolution of Fulani culture in modern times and holding workshops to help foster a better understanding of the many dialects of the Fulani language. Usman Sowah, president of Fulbear Africa, tells Ricky Schreier how the group is also promoting peace among the Fulani cattle herders in the country.
Like the Fulani ethnic groups comprises of a lot of dialects among themselves, unlike many tribes or many ethnic groups. That has caused a lot of difference or disintegration among the Fulanis themselves. So this is what the association aims to do, to ensure all Fulani accept each other as Fulanis and see themselves as one people, to maintain peace and again to reintegrate all Fulanis as one people. The theme for our recent program, for our recent anniversary, was the evolution of Fulani culture in modern times. It means how we would incorporate our traditional or cultural things to current day generation, you know. And one of those ideas is we are trying to get the traditional dresses, incorporate them with current day fashion, at least to create a fashion trend that would have at least some relation to the Fulani traditional wear.
I know there are some places in the West African region where the Fulani tend to get blamed in the society for certain problems. There tends to be a stigmatization of Fulani that the Fulani have to deal with in certain countries. Do you think this is true? And is this one reason it's important to promote the Fulani culture?
Yes, it might be true. I don't know. But then this is one of our objectives. In our forums, we preach peace, we advise people to be law-abiding and to live in a way in which they wouldn't harm anybody, to love and appreciate anybody they live in society.
When you say promote peace and stability, are there recent events that make this a greater concern? You know, what are some of the conflicts that the Fulani have had recently? I know many Fulani are pastoralists, and so they come into conflict sometimes with local farmers in areas.
Those are the only types of conflicts in which I am aware of. I am in the Gambia, and it's a very peaceful country. The little issues you have is those, like you said, those that are involved in cattle rearing or cattle herding, and at times they have differences with those that are involved in farming. Those are things that are very normal.
Recently as well, I've spoken to a human rights expert who said there are concerns that there is a group of Fulani who are starting to associate more with a kind of a sect of Boko Haram as an extremist. Have you heard concerns of this?
No, I have not, and I cannot accept that because I don't know, I'm not aware of it. But then what I know is I believe as people we can promote peace.
That was Usman Sowah, president of Fulbe Africa. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Banjul, The Gambia. Kenya has reopened Garissa University College, the scene of the single deadliest terrorist attack in East Africa since the 1998 U.S. Embassy bombings. Teachers and some students returned to the college on Monday, 9 months after gunmen rampaged through the eastern Kenyan school and killed 148 people, all but five of them students. Classes are set to resume next week. The college was scheduled to reopen during the summer, but officials decided to move on the date last month when government officials and MPs visited the town. Ethnic Somali politicians representing Garissa town told the government they were determined to reopen the only university in the region, says college principal Ahmed Usman Wafa. He said the decision ultimately stemmed from a desire to move on. The Abidjan Zoo is slowly coming back to life after years of crisis and funding shortfalls. It became a symbol of devastation when dozens of animals starved during the 2010-2011 conflict amid fighting outside its walls. Now, new lions and zebras have arrived, but hurdles remain as efforts are being made to restore the zoo to its glory days. Emily Yelf reports from Abidjan.
It's another busy Saturday in the Abidjan National Zoo, the only zoo in Ivory Coast, as visitors flock to get a glimpse of primates, hippos and crocodiles.
This species we just seen is the slender-snouted crocodile. It is endangered and protected by the United Nations, do you understand? So we must protect them.
In its heyday 15 years ago, the zoo had about 500 animals from 50 species, but the various crises that swept the country took a toll on the zoo. During the post-election violence in 2010 and 2011, a third of the animals died of hunger. Zookeeper Tia Lama remember having to climb trees to fetch leaves to feed the herbivores, but it wasn't enough.
We lost a lot of animals. There was no food. We couldn't go out to get some. There was a lot of damages. We lost six lions.
4 years ago, the Ivorian government voted a rehabilitation plan for the zoo to restore damaged buildings and buy new animals. Since last year, lions, ostriches and zebras are back, attracting their fair share of visitors.
It's a fun place. A lot of children don't know the animals, so the zoo allows them to get to know them.
Besides government funding, director Samuka Kane says the zoo gets help from volunteers and donations to improve the place.
If you have unexpected things happening that are not planned in the budget, financing can be a problem. So in some cases, donations help us with some rehabilitations.
And the need for renovation remains great, as old infrastructure can be a safety hazard for animals. Last May, a large chunk of the enclosure wall of the chimpanzee collapsed after heavy rains. They had to be relocated in small cages, which led to fight and a couple of primates killed. The zoo is still waiting for finances to rebuild the wall. Despite its limited funds, the zoo entrance fees hasn't changed in over a decade, between 10 and 50 cents per person. Kane says it is because the zoo is attached to its social role.
I walk around in the park and listen to the visitors. I can tell that people are realizing more and more that animals are useful and are not only for eating, but are also part of our environment.
Future plans include the opening of a children's zoo, as well as a restaurant and a gift shop. Emily Yap for VOA News in Abidjan.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sports here is Mark Ullman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we focus on football. Uganda will stage the 2016 Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Under-17 and Women's Championships. The SECAFA Secretary-General Nicolas Musonye revealed in Khartoum, Sudan on Monday. Burundi is venue for this year's SECAFA Under-20 Championship. Zanzibar will stage the SECAFA Kagame Club Championship, while the region's flagship event, the SECAFA Senior Challenge Cup, takes place in the Sudan. Staying in Khartoum, newly elected SECAFA President Dr. Mutasim Gafar of Sudan, unveiled a five-year strategic plan with an emphasis on youth and women's football development. In this regard, SECAFA is entering an exchange program on youth development with Saudi Arabia Football Association. Gafar says they will overhaul the SECAFA statutes, taking into consideration the changing football environment. SECAFA's 12 member associations include Burundi, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Djibouti, Kenya, Rwanda, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, Tanzania mainland, Uganda, and Zanzibar. Meanwhile, Ghana will vote for a FIFA president who promises to increase Africa's slots at the FIFA World Cup, the Ghana Football Association president Kwesi Nyantigi told the Accra media. Africa has currently five slots at the 32-nation event. Nyantigi says he expects Africa to be granted six or seven slots at the global contest. The Ghana football chief also wants to see an increase in Africa's representation on the FIFA executive committee. This is FIFA's highest decision-making body. Currently, Africa has 4 out of 23 members. Nyantigi's remarks come a week ahead of the West Africa Football Union WAFU Zone B General Assembly due in Accra. Nyantigi is also the WAFU Zone B president and seeks to drive his point home when the FIFA presidential election candidates converge in Accra next week seeking support. The WAFU Zone B member associations are Benin, Burkina Faso, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Niger, Nigeria and Togo. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's Alan Namel for this Tuesday morning, January 5th.
This is Bappa Adamare Fota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria. My fellow Nigeria, this is the year 2016. I mean the last year will never be erased from the mind of Nigeria. This is because it is in this year that we realize the most credible election in the history of Nigeria. We have now reached to the promised land. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. 20 of the 30 candidates seeking the presidency in the Central African Republic are demanding that authorities immediately stop vote counting from the December 30 polls, which they allege were marred by ballot irregularities and voter intimidation. In a joint statement seen by the French news agency Reporters on Monday, the dissenting candidates called the polls, quote, an electoral masquerade, and called for the whole process to be purely and simply stopped. They also called for all parties to negotiate procedures for safeguarding the nation of 5 million citizens. Kenya has reopened Garissa University College of the single deadliest terrorist attack in East Africa since the 1998 U.S. Embassy bombings. Teachers and some students returned to the college on Monday, 9 months after government rampaged through the eastern Kenyan school and killed 148 people, all but 5 of them students. Classes are set to resume next week. And that's it for this Tuesday, January 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butters saying have a lovely day.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Music time in Africa. savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC. 2200 hours.